good conversation, unabashedly Wisconsin. This is Up North News Radio. Now, live from Chicago and the Democratic National Convention, here is the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Breitlow.
Hey, good morning. Welcome back to Up North News Radio, unabashedly Wisconsin, even when we're in Chicago, and brought to you by Courier Newsroom and carried by our friends on the Civic Media Radio Network. We're here in Chicago as the Democratic National Convention has wrapped up. More about that coming up in just a bit. But first, coming up on 7:07 on this Friday morning, August 23rd, meteorologist Brittany Merlot is here, as is always her co-host, her guest host, Rob from Tigerton, who says, good morning from Tigerton. It's partly cloudy and 59. Today, I got my second lawn tractor back from Adam's Small Engine in Clintonville. Thank God. John had done most of my work that last week. Since June 1st, I've lost 25 pounds, cutting back on sweets. I love snacking on string cheese, and I drink water. Yeah, they're talking to you guys. He's drinking his water. He's telling us.
Good.
So, I love Rick Springfield music. I play his songs on my phone.
Fun.
So this just goes, if you deliver a message often enough, it works, including drinking your water. Yeah. So, Brittany, we just need you to deliver the same beautiful, perfect forecast every single day, and we'll believe you.
And then it'll come true, right?
And it'll come true. I think that's exactly how it works.
If only, I wish. I've tried it before. Mother Nature doesn't listen to me.
No, it doesn't. But how is the weekend looking?
It's actually looking super summery and more on the dry side of things. So this is some good news. We do have some clouds and scattered showers working their way through northern Wisconsin and also eastern Wisconsin right now. But as we go through the day, we'll continue to see those spotty showers stay north. More and more sunshine south. High temperatures today will be climbing into those upper 70s, flirting with 80 degrees. It'll be breezy with winds out of the south, pumping in that humidity. So we will be feeling it as soon as tomorrow once it gets here. So it'll be a hot and humid weekend ahead. Temperatures will be into the mid 80s by tomorrow. We're going to hold in the mid 80s for Sunday before we pop to near 90. And as we go into next week. So it's going to be a very hot start to next week, and that's also when it starts to get stormy as well. So again, we do have those spotty showers north today, and then some of those chances work south for tomorrow night. So you could see a few showers tomorrow night in the southern half of the state, but that's it. Nothing severe, nothing major. They're just little annoying showers that move through.
It is on the other side of the state line, but a lot of folks in western Wisconsin will head over to the Minnesota State Fair at some point in St. Paul. That opened up yesterday. Just you and 55,000 of your closest friends, all shoulder to shoulder, all squeezed in there, you know, going from place to place. And on a hot, sticky day.
I didn't think about that.
Can anything be better? But. Or whatever you're doing. Look, I for one am happy to have another summer weekend, and I'm hoping you've got one more in your back pocket for Labor Day weekend.
I'm trying.
Well, I know. No pressure on you whatsoever. Do you have fun weekend plans?
I do. I'm going to go to the water parks, hit up one more time before summer's over. Nice. All this heat is here. So yeah.
Good deal. All right. Well, enjoy. We'll see you on Monday.
Sounds good. Have a good weekend.
You bet. There's meteorologist Brittany Merlot with our weekend forecast. The Milwaukee Brewers ended up dropping 2 out of 3 to the St. Louis Cardinals, losing yesterday 3-0, and then heading on to Oakland for a 3-game series that's going to be starting this evening. Don't fret for the Brewers just yet. They still have a 10-game lead on the Cardinals in the National League Central Division, and hopefully we'll do well against Oakland, but sometimes it's against those truly lesser teams that they have really found themselves struggling sometimes. Anyway, the series at Oakland starts tonight, 8:40 first pitch, pregame at 8:05 on Civic Media stations in Richland Center, Racine, Kenosha, Park Falls, and Oshkosh. So let's get back to covering some of the Democratic National Convention and the speeches that were given by a whole host of Democratic leaders, not just Vice President Kamala Harris. Of course, we will get to her, but we discussed with Kia Vakil in our last half hour about the depth of the Democratic bench that has really been built back up after, you know, a little over a decade ago, being just simply destroyed because of the Tea Party and the early rise of what would be called Trumpism. And it just seemed like there were conservative rising political stars everywhere. You know, your Paul Ryans, who by and large are all gone. Trumpism has basically chased them away. And now it's Democrats who, in speaker after speaker at the convention, you saw, not just, Elizabeth Warren, but then you see Gretchen Whitmer, and you see from state after state, people who can clearly be ready to run 4 years from now if Kamala Harris were to fall short, or even 8 years from now because of the youth on that bench. And we've been hearing from Wisconsin delegates throughout. I mentioned talking to a 16-year-old who came as a guest this week to Chicago and said that the replacement of President Biden, his decision to step aside for Vice President Kamala Harris, has probably done more than anything else could have possibly done to have young people engaged once again and looking at a party that is positive and forward-looking as opposed to what Trumpism has become. Kamala Harris recognized that as well and talked about being a uniter in her remarks last night that, look, you're not going to agree with her on everything, but you're going to have somebody who's trying to be a president for all Americans rather than, simply looking out for themselves like we know somebody else would likely do. Here's what Kamala Harris had to say about being a president for the country.
And let me say, I know there are people of various political views watching tonight, and I want you to know, I promise to be a president for all Americans. You can always trust me to put country above party and self, to hold sacred America's fundamental principles, from the rule of law to free and fair elections to the peaceful transfer of power. I will be a president who unites us around our highest aspirations.
In the crowd and at the Wisconsin delegation meetings was Duff Martin, the teacher from Eau Claire, who had served for a time as president of WEAC and is now on the National Board of Directors for the National Education Association. So I caught up with him and asked him a bit about the role of education in the presidential campaign. And we started with that controversial proposal in Project 2025, something that Republicans have been saying for a long time about getting rid of the U.S. Department of Education. They like to say it's about local control, but it's really everything that would be removed in dismantling the Department of Education that would hurt local schools across the country. That's the start of my quick conversation here with Duff Martin.
Well, I think it'd be really dangerous because the Department of Ed helps to facilitate so many of the wonderful federal grant programs that are available to our schools, the lunch programs, the breakfast programs, many of the title programs. So it's imperative that we have somebody who has oversight, making sure that states are administering and doing the things that they're supposed to be doing. But more importantly, the Office of Civil Rights that's located within the Department of Education to make sure that we're addressing inequities, inequalities that exist in so many of our schools. So that there's an avenue for somebody who feels that something's been done to them wrong, that they have an avenue to make sure there's accountability.
Well, let me seize right on that, because we know the Wisconsin Institute for Law and Liberty has been bringing cases against school districts or making noises about these kinds of investigations. It sounds like there's something downright hostile about looking into allegations that there's inappropriate, even illegal behavior in our school districts.
Absolutely. You know, one of the things that really disturbs me about Wisconsin Law and Liberty is they're not taking the facts. I think law is supposed to be rely on facts. And they're not. They're going with, the hostile, as you mentioned, the hostile environment, creating something that does not exist to fire up that small base. It has nothing to do with really what's going on in their eyes, and that it's very dangerous.
What differences could voters realistically hope for, or educators realistically hope for,
if November goes very well for Democrats?
I think we would definitely see a change in the funding for our public schools. We would see less referenda just to pay the bills. We'd see investment in our schools, particularly our rural schools, that need so much of that funding that they're not getting. We'd maybe see a decrease, at least my hope is, in vouchers, which is hurting our public schools because we're not able to give the funds that are needed and necessary. And so those two will have an incredible impact if the legislature is changed.
Final question, getting a teacher on the ticket.
Oh.
Talk about that.
That's just a dream. A teacher who is so, just so real, so authentic. You know, when he talked about why he looks a little older than what people think he is, because he did 20 years in the lunchroom. Well, I know what he's going through because I did 20 years in a middle school lunchroom at South Middle School where I was a lunchroom supervisor. He's just a relatable kind of person. People like him, know him. He's authentic. He's real. He's an educator, and that's incredible.
You heard that perhaps more than any other comment at the convention from people who were just so thrilled to see a teacher on the ballot. So many folks who are delegates were educators, and we've hardly mentioned Tim Walz this morning because I feel like we've talked about him for a week and a half nonstop, but he continues to impress.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I mean, even like something I noticed from last night when Kerry Washington was up there and she referred to herself as a mother, a daughter, a friend, and then she said a proud union member too. Yes. When she said union, the place exploded.
Oh, and you talk about marketing, branding, things like that. Whoever decided at the IBEW, the Electrical Workers Union, Whoever decided that every electrical worker union member there would be wearing a shirt that glows in the dark.
Oh.
So at the times when the lights went down and you saw just the place was dotted with union members who had their glow in the dark shirts on. That was just an outstanding idea. Former U.S. Attorney Jim Santel is standing by. We're going to ask him about a couple of legal cases. They're not Wisconsin related, but they may impact the way that voting is taking place in a couple of states here. We'll talk to him about that in the news. And apparently when I mentioned that today was National Ride the Wind Day, you know, dealing with hang gliding and things like that, he finds a legal connection to everything. And we'll ask him about that in just a moment here. Wherever you're listening across Wisconsin on this beautiful Friday morning, when you're here, you're up north. Even when we're live from Chicago on the Civic Media Radio Network. One of the things that I haven't mentioned here in Chicago this week is that right across the street from our hotel is the Auditorium Theater where Stephen Colbert was taping his show throughout the course of the week. Turns out former U.S. Attorney Jim Santel was one of those folks who was in line at one point this week to catch the late show there. Jim Santel, good morning. How was the experience?
Pat, good to be with you. And, you know, happily, I don't even want to say endure the line. It was very long. It wrapped around your hotel, around a couple of other blocks, got in, and 3,800 of us enjoyed the taping of Stephen Colbert's show. We finished at about 12:30 at night. He went live after you were all done there at the convention. Great fun to be there. Nancy Pelosi, Hakeem Jeffries, also guests, and a wonderful impression of Melania Trump along the way. So lots of fun that night. Absolutely.
Hey, we'll get to the election cases in just a moment here, but you always come prepared. And we did mention that today is National Ride the Wind Day. And so what do you have in terms of legal cases that deal with hang gliding?
Absolutely. Well, not surprisingly, Pat, when you mentioned that it's something that maybe one should think about before doing wildly, great numbers of cases. I can give you the names of them, but less relevant to know. They're all about releases. So in other words, when you get on those hang gliding apparatuses.
Oh, yeah. I always wonder about those releases that you have to sign, right?
And you should know for future reference that lots of courts have gone in many different directions about whether or not those can be strictly construed under the law to release the companies that provide this kind of entertainment or not. And so if something bad happens to you, you may or may not be able to sue the owners of those groups. And got lots of cases in California, actually, that address that issue. Thankfully, most of them not involving death, but a lot of them involving people who probably thought wiser of it, as you're sort of recommending here this morning.
Okay, that's good to know. When you're signing these releases, sometimes we make the joke, you're signing your life away. And depending on the case, that may or may not be true. Which reminds me, I didn't prep you for this, but I did see the headline a day or two ago that Disney is no longer trying to enforce something that when you sign up for Disney Plus, that the language in there, they wanted it to cover everything. Like, what was it? Like, if you get hurt at Disney World or something along those lines, it's crazy.
It is. Once again, lawyers run amok, if you will, which we sometimes do. And we think, okay, we've got a contract here. Let's throw in everything and see if we can restrict and limit all kinds of things. Always important to take a look at what your real purpose is. And sometimes stunningly, attorneys get beyond their skis, and this is probably one of them. Disney,
oh, yeah.
Mickey Mouse, and many wise to do this and pull back on that kind of thing.
Let's talk about those things that are related to the elections coming up. Let's start with Arizona, a case involving what kind of a person, whether you have citizenship on the ballot.
Exactly, two kinds of things. Supreme Court, this is one of these emergency dockets, sometimes called the shadow docket. And so what you have is in a very terse, unsigned order, just yesterday, the Supreme Court basically says that Arizona can for now enforce a particular law that requires proof of citizenship to register to vote, registration to vote. That they say you can go ahead. What they split on is whether or not you can also impose an obligation for people who are already registered and are going to vote. Those folks, the Supreme Court does not enforce that side of it. So you don't need proof of citizenship. One, if you're already registered, want to be a new voter in Arizona, then there's a little bit more of a stumbling block to that. And again, it's viewed generally as a win, for a partial victory at least, for those people who support restrictions on voting, which again, generally don't approach things that way. The voting is a good thing. The franchise is important. Supreme Court does that in a very, very terse, unsigned opinion just yesterday, which could have a major impact upon Arizona, which, as we know, is one of the swing states in the coming election.
Yes. And again, the usual, I don't know if disclaimer is the right language here, but there is only one political class in the developed world that has as part of its mission making it harder for its own citizens to vote. And, for crassly political purposes. And that's something that was not a feature of the Republican Party in the United States until very recently, despite the complete lack of any evidence showing that there was any kind of a significant problem that needed to be addressed. Now over to, is it Arkansas, where we wrap things up on, again, putting initiatives on the ballot. And we've seen in state after state, citizens have made sure that they can codify into law or in their state constitution women's reproductive health rights. But Arkansas is so far to the right wing that the Supreme Court is, what, now an impediment to that process?
It is, apparently. So what happens here is you've got it just right, Pat. You've got a proposal that would have allowed abortions up to 18 weeks, would change the nature of the present law in Arkansas there that basically prohibits abortions except for women's life at risk, medical emergencies. And what happens is they get all the 101,000 signatures to get this on the ballot, much more beyond what's needed to do so. And a group comes in and challenges that on the basis of, get this, talking about lawyers, the organizers had failed to correctly submit a sworn statement confirming that some paid canvassers had been instructed on how to collect signatures. This is really dancing on the head of a pin. And believe it or not, after the Secretary of State agrees with that, the Arkansas Supreme Court also ruled that this abortion rights amendment ineligible to be placed on the November ballot because of the failure to provide information about the nature of the canvassers who got the votes to get on the first place. And so abortion not on the ballot in Arkansas, as it is and will be in many other states, as you just indicated, another impact plainly upon the November election.
I have to examine this further here. Okay, so paid canvassers, yes. You know, that like when, let's say, when I wanted to get on the ballot, I needed to get so many signatures on a nominating petition. I could do that on my own. I could ask people to help me, but plenty of people also will pay for a company to get people to hire them, take these clipboards, go knock on doors or stand on street corners. And you're saying that because prospective members of the public weren't told that some of these canvassers might be paid, that that is enough to mean you can't get that question on the ballot?
It's even worse than that, Pat, believe it or not. This is all about failing to provide a statement about how the paid canvassers had been instructed on collecting signatures. So you've got to do this under, again, Arkansas law. You've got to provide this to the election commission there. They didn't get that in. And so it reduces the number just below what's required. The court also says, oh, by the way, you can't remedy this. Don't go back and get more signatures. We're done with this. It's really pretty outrageous.
This is in so many other states, a court would say, you know, counselor, you are grasping. You're grasping at straws to find something, but in Arkansas, they're like, yeah, whatever, you know, whatever works. We can find that. A note that in this morning's Up North News daily newsletter, a couple of different stories in there, including our setup of the presidential campaign. Now that the convention is over, it's the prosecutor versus the felon. And you will find comments in there from Jim Santel about the importance of a prosecutor, basically rooted in that phrase that she uses when she stands up in court, Kamala Harris for the people, and you know that you have to take that mission seriously of being for the people.
Right. A delight to be with you on that and provide some commentary. Always good to chat with you about these important issues. The relationship, as we said, not just hang gliding, but between the law and politics and the election coming up. Lots of litigation between now and then, and important to stay on focus based upon what's going to happen here in the next few weeks or so.
And a lot of that ground is covered on Jim's Saturday morning program, Amicus, a Law Review, Saturday mornings 9 to 11 across Civic Media, rebroadcast on Sundays. Jim, thanks so much. Have a great weekend.
Always a pleasure, my friend. We'll see you again next Friday morning.
You got it. All right. Mark Jacob is joining us next as Up North News Radio continues from Chicago on a Friday morning on the Civic Media Radio Network. Again, the Guardians of the Galaxy soundtrack, the first one, the awesome mix, number one on this day 10 years ago. The Democratic Convention has wrapped up here in Chicago, and our coverage of it on Up North News Radio continues now with Mark Jacob, veteran Chicago journalist, whom I had the pleasure of seeing, along with Jennifer Schulze and Joan Esposito and others at the Courier Newsroom reception for the convention last evening. Mark, good morning. How you doing?
Doing great.
All right. Did you get any? Oh, they're out of my reach. They're just out of reach. Did you get any of the Up North News cocktail napkins?
I did not. Were they good?
No, they were just. It was a nice little treat to see that there were cocktail napkins with the state of Wisconsin, and it says Up North News on there. One for each of the Courier outlets. Oh, so great. Michigan, Pennsylvania. So needless to say, don't tell my bosses. I'm sure they're not listening, but I've got such a stash of Up North News napkins now that we're going to be using. You get free stuff where you can get it. Other people get funny hats and shirts and things like that.
There have to be some benefits to the job. You know?
Yes, exactly. Well, Mark, when we look back at media coverage of the week's news, we have to look back at this one and say, man, you got to hand it to all the media pundits who were all but either predicting or wishing a return of 1968. I mean, there was so much tear gas. I mean, there were so many. Oh wait, none of that happened because there weren't any indications that it would happen. But the amount of projection was noteworthy, and I, for one, am glad to kind of wallow in pointing it out.
Yeah, the whole world was watching, but it wasn't watching because there was mayhem in the streets,
right?
And it's interesting how you get that, you know, this predictions of 30 to 40,000 protesters. Oh, it's going to be a repeat. You know, and frankly, nobody in Chicago thought that. That was one of those kind of things that gets invented in some newsroom in New York or something. And we knew this was not 1968, and it wasn't going to be that way.
what they would have, if they really wanted to, they would have put it in historical context and pointing out that there was also a convention in 1996, and that in 1996, and I say this tongue firmly planted in cheek, that there was something just as outrageous as the riots of 68, and that is the film clips they still play to this day of everybody in the 96 convention crowd doing the Macarena, which was the hot new dance that year, you know?
Right. You know, I mean, there were protests, and that, you know, that, and frankly, one thing that's, that I like is that the Democrats like protests. I mean, they think it's an expression of democracy.
Correct.
You know, and for people to say what they think. It's certainly, I mean, Pat, I think it's certainly better for people to be out on the street with signs than sitting in their couch and just complaining privately. I mean, I'm all for people. That's democracy, you know, and that's good. Everything, you know, was, there was very little violence or anything you could call kind of mayhem. It was peaceful. It was peaceful expression of people's political views, and that's what it's supposed to be. So it was a success. And frankly, the whole convention was kind of impressively successful.
The other thing that stood out about the convention is, and it didn't have to rise to the level of, you know, rioting, but that the party was and is as united as it is, that it coalesced very quickly around Kamala Harris. I think that the vice president, frankly, was spot on in what she said about the issue that was most likely to be divisive, and that was Israel and the Palestinians in Gaza. I think that she threaded that needle. It's certainly what I would have said word for word about the conflict. But my larger question to you is, you know, how did Democrats avoid, you know, the circular firing squad that so often plagues them in election cycles?
Well, I think looking at the alternative is great motivation, you know, and even on the Gaza situation, which is clearly a divisive issue for the Democrats and for the country. They managed to, yeah, you're right that they managed to get it, you know, kind of exactly right. And even on that issue, the Republicans are way over on the other side where many of them don't even embrace a two-state solution.
Right.
You know, so it's one of those things where it's a tough position for the pro-Palestinian folks to be in because, you know, because obviously they're not satisfied with what the Biden administration is doing, but they have to know, they just have to know that a Trump administration would be much, much worse.
Here's how much worse it would be. There was, and I haven't seen the origin story of this. I've just seen all the reaction story that Trump is apparently planning some kind of January 6th awards gala.
Yeah.
You know, basically praising and awarding somehow some of the people who tried to overthrow the government of our country. And he's going to recognize that.
Right. It's at his Bedminster club, you know, golf club where it's going to be some sort of award ceremony. And I told my wife about this and she said it sounded like those kind of sting operations that they have where they like offer criminals free Super Bowl tickets. So they all show up at a hotel and then they can get arrested. I mean, she thought it was just some trick gathering of criminals and which I love that theory. And although Trump wouldn't be, he's one of the criminals.
So I was going to say, if it were anywhere but Bedminster, yes, yeah. I would believe that.
I mean, right? Think about, I mean, that's the thing. I mean, that's the thing that blows my mind, you know, and I think, I'm sure I've told you before that, you know, I was raised in a Republican household. Mm-hmm. I love and respect some Republicans in my family. And so I'm not anti-Republican. I just feel like what's really happened is that they've just gone totally away from the values they once held. And that's, to me, is incredibly alarming. I mean, these people are criminals. They've been prosecuted. They've been convicted by juries. And we saw it on film. We saw video of them. They're like taking American flag and bludgeoning cops with it. I mean, mm-hmm. I mean, it's mind blowing what they were doing. And for them to be treated as heroes by a major political party is just stunning. And it's shameful. And it's got to be treated that way. And I'm so glad that keeps on getting pointed out by the Democrats. They need to point that out.
Oh, absolutely. Especially if certain, you know, media outlets won't, if the Republican Party won't call it out, if members of the media won't call it out, then it falls upon the rest of us to do just that. The convention also there always has to be something every week where I look at some national newsroom someplace and say, you've got to be kidding me. And the thing that did it this week was something that you'd think is pretty basic, fact checking. Yeah. But what we learned this week, Mark, was that not all fact checks are created equal, that you can, shall we say, expand the boundaries of what you're fact checking in order to get, you wouldn't think both sides-ism could affect fact checking, but it very much can. That in the in the rush to try to look like you're not playing favorites, in other words, you're going to make both sides look bad, you're really going to stretch things in the category of fact-checking this week.
Yeah, and it was trying to be kind of even-handed in a way that it's not even-handed, because, I mean, I will stipulate that Democrats sometimes have embellished or exaggerated, said things that weren't true, and that they deserve fact-checking. But if you look at it on balance, they do that way less than the Republican Party. I mean, Trump last night said that 70% of the American people are in poverty. I mean, 70%, he said, which is, he also said that everybody, quote, everybody, including liberals, was in favor of overturning Roe. And so, you know, with that on the other side, Democrats look pretty truthful comparatively. But the news media, you know, they had a job to do. They were paid. They were sent to Chicago. So they had to, like, you know, go through and do stuff. And so, you know, it's, they just said, well, instead of saying the things were false, they took basic rhetoric by the Democrats and said, well, this is speculative, or there is not enough evidence to support this. And on stuff that was not really an assertion of fact, but was more rhetoric. I mean, it was an embarrassing kind of diminishment of the whole process of fact checking. And they got mocked richly on social media for it, and deservedly so.
Yeah, you can't pretend that Trump has never said something when he has said everything but the exact words. Because again, he's not unlike a mob boss in that you never say, go rob this bank. You know, you provide all the instructions, you telegraph all the language that's out there without saying the magic words. And the fact checkers are like, well, he never said, I'm going to, you know, cut X dollars from this program. Well, but there's nothing else you can interpret his comments to mean.
Right. One of the things they picked on was, you know, remember when Trump said that yes, of course we needed to prosecute women who got abortions. We needed to criminally prosecute them. And then he, you know, that caused a big uproar, so he walked it back. And so the fact checkers, I think it was at the New York Times, they're saying, well, he walked it back. He withdrew that, so it doesn't really count. You know, you can't bring that up anymore.
It's not a just kidding exception. Come on. Right.
And also, look at what Trump does on stuff like that all the time, where he says one thing and then says another. And that way he can say, you know, well, I said it, I denied it. You know, he just fuzzes the issue. And he's also, like many politicians, he's talking to two different audiences at the same time. So he says it and the anti-abortion people love it. He withdraws it. And then he thinks that he diffuses the argument for the pro-abortion rights people. So you can play a lot of games with fact checking. Here, just one example, Pat, is that the Washington Post points out that Tim Walz said they'll repeal the Affordable Care Act, they'll gut Social Security and Medicare, and they will ban abortion across this country with or without Congress. Okay, so that's a rhetorical statement, and the Washington Post says, well, this is speculative. Well, of course it's speculative. It's about a prediction of what's going to happen in the future based on stuff that the Republicans have already said. I mean, come on. That's not like a false assertion of fact. That's rhetoric in a campaign. And if you can't tell the difference, you shouldn't be in the fact-checking business.
Mm-hmm. I have to ask about media coverage of conventions going forward, specifically because of the way things went this week, and specifically the roll call of the states, which turned into a massive dance party. There was a DJ. It, of course, was ceremonial because the actual count had already taken place. And so you're not going to see the old-timey conventions anymore, a dry recitation of states and votes and things like that. It is a made-for-TV spectacle. My question to you is this, and I don't know that any of us, we can't predict the future. We can just make our best guess, is when we saw that this week, did that tell us that conventions going forward are going to be a little bit more in the entertainment business because they know they've got to keep people watching? Or do we think that some of the major networks will cover the conventions less and say, well, they're having their party, we're not necessarily going to cover it?
Well, I mean, just when I was in the news business, I always thought conventions got overcovered. Mm-hmm. I felt like There's not that much news made there. It's mostly a kind of made for TV show. And if it's a, you know, if it's an infomercial, why would you want to, you know, broadcast it? Now, obviously you have to show the big speeches, but I kind of felt like in most conventions, there's just very little news committed. Now this one, you know, you have Harris, you know, taking the baton from Biden a month ago. You have this just dramatic shift in the race, and you have her at a convention and really kind of reintroducing herself to the American people. So you've got to cover that. I mean, that's a big deal, and you need to cover it. But I do think they get overcovered, and any smart political party is going to turn it into a, you know, entertainment show. And the roll call sure showed that. It was a brilliant combination to me of hip, because they had like a DJ doing the whole thing, but also corny. I mean, it was, you know, had the old, you know, from the state that has a high school that has three Hall of Famers and stuff like that. I mean, it, you know, the home of corn or whatever it was. So it was, it had that kind of charming and kind of funny element, but it also kind of was put in a modern context, and everyone wanted to know what song is going to get picked for what state and stuff. So it was actually brilliant entertainment.
I think coming off of the Olympics, they've learned that I think they should also take advantage of streaming, because there's times where it's like, wait, I wanted to see that thing, but they broke away to talk to a pundit or something like that. And they should let people know, hey, if you just want to watch the clean feed, you know, come on over here. There's no shortage of streaming opportunities, because I don't mind a little bit of punditry. But by and large, it's like, wait, this is the Democrats' show. This is the Republicans' show. Let the people see what they're actually putting on and decide for themselves. You can follow what Mark is doing and talking about at his newsletter, Stop the Presses, at stopthepresses.news. Mark Jacob, thanks so much again. Have a great weekend.
Talk to you later.
All right. When we come back, we will talk to Dan Schumacher and talk about heading into the weekend sports-wise right after this on the Civic Media Radio Network. I hold up for the social media cameras the Up North News cocktail napkins, soon to be available at our merchandise shop. No, not. Hey, you take swag wherever you can get it. Dan Schumacher's with us now. How are things up in beautiful Ashland?
A little stormy today, a little dark, a little gloomy, but it's supposed to be a warm, nice weekend, though, I hear. So I got to ask you a question, because you're in Chicago right now.
Yes, sir.
So where did you eat this week?
Oh, funny that you should say that. Mm-hmm. Because I'd heard about Fontenot's and is it Paisano's?
Mm-hmm.
And I did get to Fontenot's for one slice of deep dish pizza. And I will say that if it had come directly out of the oven, you know, if it was like, you know, really freshly made, I think it would have been one of the best things I'd ever had. Now, again, if you order pizza by the slice, it may have been sitting out for 20 minutes, may have been sitting out for an hour. So it wasn't everything that it could be, but it wasn't bad. And I really wish I would have had time to try. There was at least two other pizza joints in the area that I would have loved to have tried. And I have to say this, I'm coming back here at some point. I don't have many reasons to come to Chicago, but the function that we were at yesterday was in a neighborhood called the West Loop, which was kind of like, you know, the Cannery Row of its time. And it is adorable. It you know, you're looking at that much like Greg, we were talking about the historic Third Ward in Milwaukee.
Mm-hmm.
Anybody that talks about cities being, you know, dead and terrible places to go, you haven't been to a city lately.
Yeah.
You go to some of these places, and I want to come back here. I want to explore that neighborhood more, and I want to go to more of these restaurants. Don't worry, I'm not going to be rooting for the Cubs anytime soon. But you got food and all kinds of great things to see here, buddy.
Was that over by UIC, University of Illinois Chicago, the west near West Side? That's all Italian over there.
Yeah, it was just amazing. Loved it very much.
There's an old restaurant there right in the neighborhood part off that beaten path you're talking about called Tofano's.
Okay.
And every day the menu is written on a chalkboard.
I like that.
It almost reminds you of the Italian restaurant from Godfather Yeah. Where he comes, and you know, there's
wait, a little bomb. So now I get if it's one of those pull chain flush toilets, do I get to reach up there and make sure there's not a gun there? Okay, all right.
That's right.
It's a nice place, good food, people mind their business.
They do. Mind their business.
Hey, I don't know a lot about Joey Votto. I know he's respected around baseball and he's called it a career, but leaving Cincinnati. But I just want to say my favorite sports social media post was of Joey Votto's home run spray chart, where every home run ball has landed. And it is so perfectly balanced. I mean, most home run spray charts, like, oh, he hits pretty much everything to left field, or the right field or whatever. Right. And the person had the perfect caption. They said, "Hang Joey Votto's home run spray chart in the Louvre." Because it's a thing of beauty. I don't know how you coach that for players, but when you look at disciplined hitters, that was a beautiful sight to see.
It is. It's pretty. He had a great career, very well respected. You know, it's been a good baseball season. I mean, it's been a good baseball season. I mean, for the Brewers, it's been outstanding, being up 10 games and
it's been the most nerve-wracking 10 games. It's been fun, but every so often, again, because of all the injuries and because of the youth, you know, we definitely don't want to get our hopes up too high around here, but we've enjoyed it, you know.
I constantly come back, Pat. I constantly come back. Is it Murphy or was it Council that created the success for the Brewers?
I'm gonna go with Murphy, even though I mean I'm not gonna take anything away from Craig Council, except to say, and I know I'm not the only one who said this, that maybe Pat Murphy was much more responsible behind the scenes when Council was here than we thought.
Yep, you know? That's what I was thinking.
Yeah,
what I was thinking. Which happens, you know what? It happens on every. I mean, it would Bill Parcells be as good as he was without Bill Belichick? I mean, there's all kinds of those examples of the ham and egg, and it's, you know, who should really have the credit for the game planning, the calls, you know. I mean, Buddy Ryan with Mike Ditka. I mean,
if you don't Greg Bach with Pat Kreitlow. It's absolutely. Yeah. I mean,
all right.
I'm serious.
I think say it because it's rarely ever said. The Bears are 4-0.
Whatever you got to tell yourself, buddy. Preseason. It's preseason.
I think that one thing that is very clear that hasn't been there for a few seasons is, you know, is a sense of like excitement from the team. You know, Craig Council brought a serious nature. He was a very serious guy. Pat Murphy is a fun guy. He's a good coach. He's a great coach, but he also has fun and he loves that team. And you can see that reflected in his players.
Right on.
All right. I've forgotten the guy's name already. It's not Jason Fields. It's not Mitch Trubisky. What's the guy's name?
Caleb Williams.
Apparently, the talk is that everybody's getting very excited about Caleb Williams already. And you're nodding your head that what? And I'm just going to caution you. I'm just going to caution you like you do to a friend who keeps trying to hang glide and keeps crashing, going, don't put too much faith in this one either. You know, you never know, but happy about it.
Chicago's famous for loving their second string quarterbacks. And right now I'm pretty a big fan of Padgett.
And then hating them.
Kid played for the Bears last night because Caleb didn't play. Boy, Division II, he was the equivalent of the Heisman Trophy winner in Division II. Poles, general manager, did a good job finding that find at a Division II school in Ohio. You know, kid played well, threw a couple touchdowns, ran a beautiful touchdown. He just keeps getting better. So that's why Chicago fans love the backup quarterback. Love the backup quarterback.
Do you know the biggest surprise for me this week overall was when Chad Holmes was on the program and he talked about high school football games that he was going to be covering this week. I'm like, oh, it's here already. Mm. It's already football season. This weekend.
Chippewa Falls won last night. They beat Spash.
Yes, they did. It's here. So
it is.
Time for you to start, you know, scouting around and
that's right.
See where things go from here. All right, so we got football to follow now. We got baseball. We got the NFL coming in before we know it. The Olympics are done, but we always find something to talk about with Dan. And didn't even ask about what was today's Grateful Dead song, Greg?
Sugar Maggs.
There it is. One of the top 10 classics of the Dead. I just went very classic today.
You know, my new dog is named Magnolia.
Uh-huh.
So we call it Meg. So
that's right. And adorable. Thank you, Dan. Have a great weekend.
Take care now, guys.
Greg's filling in for Jane, Matt and Aaron Eric coming up at 10 o'clock. You have a great weekend as well, sir.
You too. Get home safe and relax.
Oh, God, we have all earned it. It's been a great week here in Chicago, but it'll be nice to get back to the routine. And we will do that coming up on Monday. Up North News is the Wisconsin outlet for Courier Newsroom, a pro-democracy news network building a more informed, engaged, and representative America. I'm Pat Kreitlow. We'll see you Monday. Up North.